Welcome to the Global Research News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. I'm glad to be back with you. Two more key topics today. There's so much going on, so many things that touch our lives. I think everybody is aware of all of the financial things popping in the news, and that certainly is a very major issue. We'll get into it in the second hour. Money and banking and financial issues, economic issues, are just one of many things that affect us in so many ways. They're all important. They all affect our lives. We all need to know about them. It's the only way we can defend ourselves against the things that are harming us, and there are so many. The topic in the first hour very definitely is one of them, and it's one that most people don't think about, but you should, because it's all around us and it's getting worse, and my guest and I will talk about it. My guest is Kathy Garger. Let me tell you just a little bit about her. Oh, the topic. Well, the topic is nuclear radiation and how that touches our lives. And Kathy is an anti-radiation activist, to say the least. She's on this issue all the time. And she will tell you things I'm sure you don't know about, and you'll be shocked. So please don't miss it. The hazards are overwhelming. Kathy talks about it, writes about it. She does it as a freelance writer, as a frequent speaker. She's also a personal coach. She's working on her first book, and it concerns radiological contamination, its sources, the role played by gatekeeper organizations, the anti-radiation movement, the current nuclear resurgence, a very, very dangerous thing going on under the radar most people don't know about. And there are efforts to ban nuclear weapons. There are proposed solutions. Oh, there's all kinds of stuff going on. Months back, I wrote about this a couple of times. It's a topic that I've got to address again. But, again, Kathy is on it all the time. Kathy, are we connected?
Yes, we are. Thanks, Steve. Hi.
Oh, welcome to the program. We take a break in about a minute or so.
Okay.
But let me just get you started a little bit to talk about this. And when we hear the music strike up, it means a break is coming. And then we'll do that and come right back again. But, Kathy, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Steve. Good to be here.
Well, it's been a while. I had you on my other program months back, and it's terrific to have you back. It's been much too long, Kathy.
Thank you.
Just begin briefly and explain some of the things that you've been involved with that are so important on this issue.
Absolutely. A couple of years ago, I was merely an environmentalist, like many of us are, and the topic of radiation came upon my radar, and after doing some more research, I found out it was the invisible poison. The U.S. is the most nuked nation in the world, and most people would just don't know this. We don't see it, and as you know, the mainstream media doesn't exactly cover it, so it behooves the ordinary citizen to do the research and learn about it. I found out that in the U.S. there are over 57,000 federal sites that are contaminated with chemical toxics and radioactive materials. 20,000 of those 57,000 are radioactively contaminated. So
most people don't know that.
Yeah.
I am absolutely stunned. I had no idea.
Yes.
I knew
yes.
there were many, but I had
yes.
no idea there were that many. That means they're everywhere.
Exactly. Exactly, Steve.
Oh, let's take a break, Kathy, and we'll all hold our breath and come back, and you could explain that more.
Okay, thank you.
Kathy, pick up where you left off and get it. I am still reeling from your last statement, I must say.
Yes, Steve. On the Internet, if you search very carefully, you will find that there's far more radioactive contaminated sites than most people would even believe. And a lot of them are no longer standing. They have been covered over by wilderness areas or parks. And people are maybe living in radioactive neighborhoods of which they're not even aware because they're no longer operating. This has been going on since the 1940s, of course, with the even before the first atomic bombs started being used. So this has been, it's been a long history, over 60 years of radioactivity in our environment, purposely put there by those in government.
Kathy, let me just add one point that's easy to forget.
Mm-hmm.
A site may not be operating, but the contamination lasts, in some cases, for billions of years. In other words, forever. The contamination never goes away.
Exactly, Steve. The uranium-238, for example, has a half-life of 4.5 billion years. And if you extrapolate that out, that's many billions of years. And for, we basically say it's for all eternity. Once you use a radioactive material, it, depending on the half-life of that particular material, it can last forever. So what we're looking at is something extremely dangerous and invisible, and mostly kept quiet because, as you can imagine, most people, when they hear that their area might be radioactively contaminated, it causes people to panic.
Well, they shouldn't panic, but they should be very, very concerned, and they should want to do something about it. And I think if anyone listening to this program, anyone in the country, maybe anyone in the world, took a blood test to see what radiation levels were in our blood, we would all be shocked with the results. We are all, to one degree or another, contaminated with radiation, and it's because of our government policies. It can be commercial as well as military, but, Kathy, you know that our government is so involved in military activities, radiation being only one of them, the idea of the depleted uranium problem, a really unbelievable problem affecting so many people and their families. And this stuff... there aren't words to describe just the dangers from this.
Exactly, Steve, and it's really important for those listening. I've depressed more than one person in a public speech I've given, and since then I've learned to not just simply stress the dangers and the horror of it, but also to express some hope, and I'll talk about hope later on, but just a little bit more about it is that there are many radioactively contaminated places, as I said, 20,000 federal sites in the U.S. One of them being, you know, they can be in popular places such as San Francisco. I absolutely don't enjoy getting into politics any longer, with a few exceptions. Once in a while, you get someone rare who's willing to stand up and speak out. And one of these individuals is from the 8th District of California in San Francisco. And you've probably heard of her, Cindy Sheehan.
Oh, I knew exactly who you were going to say.
She is an unbelievable person. I don't even call her a politician because she's truly a humanitarian. And she is running against Nancy Pelosi, as we all know.
I wrote about her. My article was called Peace Mom versus Guardian of Power. And Cindy was a guest months back on this program.
Yeah, Guardian of Power, Nuclear Nancy, as many of us in this biz call her. She we could go on and on an entire program about the congressional speaker for the House, but Nancy Pelosi was very involved in bringing a revitalization, as they call it, to Hunter's Point in San Francisco, which is the old radioactive nuclear submarine site, where they also did some radioactive testing. And it's a horribly contaminated area with radioactivity and chemical toxics galore. And they've allocated, with Ms. Pelosi's help, they allocated a bit of money to clean it up, and they have Lennar, the master housing developer there. And Cindy Sheehan has been, to her credit, absolutely outspoken about the obscenity of, you know, putting homes, putting upscale homes and getting rid of the folks who live there who are, by the way, very sick, understandably so, and trying to cover it up, doing a minimal job of cleanup. And Cindy Sheehan has just been outraged about it, and I also have written about her and have been, you know, studying that entire situation because people of San Francisco talk about environmental racism. Those folks have been poisoned, and it's been swept under the rug, and many have done mass exodus, and there's only, you know, a small percentage still living there of the original folks, so many of them sick.
Kathy, a related topic to what we're talking about this morning is a subject that I wrote about one time, two, 3 months ago, I think. Now the time goes by so fast. Biowarfare and the fact that the government is conducting a secret research and development and production of some of the most dangerous bioweapons. Now you add this to the nuclear activities going on. On top of that, there are hundreds of there are government labs around the country, but there are hundreds of corporate-run labs also doing this kind of research. And one literally can be in your neighborhood, where I live in Chicago, or someone else in San Francisco, or you in the East. I mean, this, they can be anywhere, and they're doing these terrible experiments. If the smallest amount of one of these substances by accident gets released, I don't know what vast an area it can contaminate, but it can do grievous harm, and it can kill many people if it's the worst of some of the things that that they're doing work on. So you've got this, you get these kinds of toxic things that are being experimented on, that are proliferating, and the public knows nothing about it.
Exactly, Steve. One of my first forays into this entire subject was with the Livermore National Nuclear Weapons Laboratory right outside of San Francisco, and I've written extensively on that. And to make a very long story short, they've been exploding depleted uranium and tritium into the air near San Francisco for many, many, many years. I believe the first explosion was around 1956. So that's how many decades? It's been going on so long, and they were doing, they got a permit to explode this into the air within 100 miles. There are 10 million people, and they've been doing this with 1,000 pounds of depleted uranium and chemical toxics, as well as tritium, which is also radioactive. But the public wasn't even really aware of these explosions. But once it came out in the news that they wanted to go from 1,000 pounds of explosives, you know, of these toxics and hazardous materials to 8,000, well, many writers, John Upton, from San Francisco, as well as Bob Nichols from San Francisco, as well as myself, a couple of others started writing about this, and there was a huge, well, almost huge, outrage in the entire, Tracy, Livermore, San Francisco area, where people said, no, you know, we don't want these chemicals and these radionuclides in our air. So what they did was they backed down and they withdrew the permit. And so now 1,000 pounds is still allowed. But what they were going to put, I got a list of their materials, and they were putting in carbon monoxide and cyanide, and the ingredient used in the gas chambers by Hitler, Xylocomb B.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, and that is what they wanted to explode into San Francisco's air.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, it absolutely boggles the mind. Now, we don't know what's in the 1,000 pounds they are still using, allowed to use by law, by explosive in the air. And when I started researching this, I realized, just as what you're saying, this is commonplace. They're not only using it in the labs, but in many locations throughout the nation, they're actually exploding it, such as in New Mexico, Nevada, California, also by me here, by Baltimore, Aberdeen Proving Grounds explodes depleted uranium, and it is a well-kept secret.
And this stuff gets into the air, it gets into the water, it spreads over an area well beyond the site where they're doing the work or the explosions or whatever. It just contaminates a vast area. It's invisible. Nobody knows it's around. Nobody knows it gets into our bloodstream. If you ingest it, if you inhale it, this is how the harm is caused. By the way, the Lawrence Livermore Labs also works on bioweapons.
Yeah.
And the program, as I understand it, is being expanded, and it may include the most toxic of all possible bioweapons that they're working, doing R&D work on. Also, in the article that I wrote a few months ago, Kathy, it covered the fact that going back, before World War II, there were experiments with various kinds of weapons and substances on the public in U.S. cities around the country, including the Bay Area, San Francisco, including New York, including Washington, cities all over the country, people not knowing that the government was exposing them to toxic substances.
Yeah.
So they could learn the effects of them in real time. Let's take another break, Kathy, and we'll be right back.
Thank you.
Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. I'm on with Kathy Geiger. We're talking about nuclear radiation issues. Kathy, I was advised that a listener had a question about, and I'm going to let you hold this just for a moment while I put a plug in for globalresearch.ca. But the listener wondered if you've done any work on what's going on at Mare Island, whether some of these same things are going on. Hold that. Think about that just for a moment, and let me just mention that this is certainly this program is certainly because Republic Broadcasting, obviously, and GlobalResearch.ca that I have a little bit of an association with, and I must go to the site half a dozen or more times every day just to see if there's anything new up, because the material posted is there's so much of it that you just you'll find in few other places, and some of it you won't find any place else. Especially if my co-host has done the writing, and he does as much as he can along with world travels. He's out of the country right now. He's based in the Montreal, Canada area, and he writes articles like the Global Financial Meltdown, and his newest one is about the pre-election militarization of the North American homeland, bringing U.S. combat troops home from Iraq to possibly help in the event of a civil disturbance. The civil disturbance may be another manufactured one, possibly as a pretext to establish martial law or suspend the Constitution. The criminal organization that I call our government has done so much in the past 8 years. They have a few months left. For the past few years, I've been waiting for an October surprise. Well, maybe this October will be the one that we get it, but there are all kinds of things going on, and you'll be best equipped to handle it if you use globalresearch.ca. What about Mare Island, Kathy? Are you aware of what's going on there?
Steve, I'm not, and what I'd like to say is there are so very many places and islands, and I'd like to get to a couple in a moment. That one I'm unfamiliar with, but there are literally, you know, many, many, many islands of which, upon which we have exploded all kinds of radioactive materials as experiments.
Now, Mare Island, is it? I didn't look it up. Mare Island, I believe, is a military base.
Okay, that one I'm not familiar with. There are literally thousands, but what I'd like to say to all listeners is please feel free to contact me. There is contact information. I have a blog at mytown.ca/Garger. That's my last name, G-A-R-G-E-R. And they can contact me. I'm happy to help people with research. And getting on to the environmental contamination, I want to let the readers know there is a phenomenal article out. It is called Populations Exposed to Environmental Uranium. and that is written by the famed geoscientist Loren Moret, and that's Loren, L-E-U-R-E-N, Moret is M-O-R-E-T, and it was published by Namaste Publishing, and it's on the Internet. And in it, and it's a long article, and it's part one of two, but she explains the environmental contamination component to the radioactive poisoning of California. And she goes into so much radiation levels and also the high numbers of diabetes and the link to radiation that we are not hearing from the diabetes associations, as well as, of course, not from the major cancer associations or the heart. Radiation affects all of our organs.
Kathy, Loren inspired me to write the first of my couple of articles on depleted uranium, and she supplied me with a lot of material that she had put together. It was dynamite stuff. I mean, you could go through all kinds of things and just be in a state of shock all the way through it. As you read the dangers, including the fact that anybody exposed to enough of this stuff literally might come down to any imaginable human illness or disease.
Exactly. The list of radiation-caused diseases is huge. There are a couple of good resources on that. One is radiation.org. That's the Radiation and Public Health Project people. And also there is another one, and that is run by Sister Dr. Rosalie Bertel. And if you just Google Rosalie Bertel, B-E-R-T-E-L-L, you will find her. And she's an epidemiologist who's done testimony with the UN and with the U.S. Senate, and she's an expert on the radiation health effects. There's something else I'd like to tell the viewers about. There's a brand new news. It's cutting edge news out of a website called Art Voice. And the name of the article is The Bomb That Fell on Niagara, The Sphere. And in it, the authors, Jeff Kelly and Lewis, I hope I say this right, Ricciucci, they expose the fact that there is a huge radioactive site in Niagara. Most people who, you know, honeymoon and go up to Niagara Falls have no idea. And there are a couple of experts quoted in it who have been studying this radio contamination. One is Ted Wayman from the Uranium Medical Research Network. He works with Dr. Asif Durakovich, and they're located at umrc.net, Uranium Medical Research Center. And then the other one is the writer I told you about from San Francisco, Bob Nichols, specializes in uranium. And it tells us, oh, I hear the music coming, but just briefly.
Oh, the music indeed.
Yes, it tells us the extent of the contamination is second to only Hanford, Washington.
Oh, I'm familiar with Hanford, Washington a little bit. Let's take a break and we'll come back.
Okay, thank you.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. Kathy, we can pick up where we left off. I'll mention one thing of the information that you sent to me this morning. Some of the examples are absolutely beyond anyone's imagination. You have a little blurb on Kuwaiti sand, irradiated sand, of course, winding up in Idaho. Idaho. So this stuff, the contamination from maybe anywhere, might end up anywhere, and not just in third world countries. It can end up being dumped right here in the U.S.
Exactly, Steve. What's happened is, they say what goes around comes around. Well, we've used so much radioactive munitions overseas that now it's coming home, and I mean literally coming home. 6,700 tons of radioactive sand from Kuwait, where there was that horrible fire at the Doha Army base in the first Gulf War, that got brought back, and it got brought back by the port in Washington State, where then it was taken in 160 containers, this radioactive sand loaded up into the containers onto rail cars from Washington State to Idaho. And longshoremen, according to Penny Coleman of Alternet.org, an article there, fantastic article, reports that the longshoremen, they did not appreciate this at all. The unions were concerned about the safety of longshoremen, an entire community, when he heard a shipment of depleted uranium was coming into Longview, which is where they were. So what's happened is you might wonder why in the world, you know, we have so much radioactive contamination already in the U.S., why are we taking back that which we've dumped overseas? And the reason is you would think it's because we're doing the right thing finally, that, you know, it's not fair to contaminate other nations, so we'll take back our radioactive waste and put it here. No, there's big money in this. Apparently, a company called American Ecology was paid money to take this material and dispose of it. And Dr. Doug Rockey, who I'm a tremendous fan, and his last name is spelled R-O-K-K-E, he's an old Army individual in charge of the depleted uranium waste project overseas. And anyway, he spoke with American Ecology, and he asked them if they knew what they were doing, wanted to make sure everything was handled properly. They had no idea what the regulations were that had been set up by the Army, you know, to remediate and properly take care of the people who would be handling this material. And the article on alternet.org goes on to say that some of our members of Congress have received monies from this company, American Ecology. And I am just beyond horrified. I mean, I know that defense contractors, such as Bechtel, they clean up the radioactive waste that Uncle Sam uses for a nice fee. And I know that companies like that do make contributions to campaign funds. But I was shocked to hear that it's even in the radioactive waste industry coming from other nations now.
That really is shocking. I can remember stories about how we take all of our toxic substances and dump them in third world countries. And we'll pay them off to do it and contaminate them. Shiploads of the stuff just get sent all over the place. But here, I guess there's so much around, Kathy, and the fact that for a price anybody can be bought. I think, the statement that we've got the best democracy money can buy.
Yeah.
Obviously, the politicians are well-funded by people who want their interests served. So when enough money is thrown around, anything can happen, even the things that harm us so much.
Yes, exactly. It's all about money. And, you know, I worry sometimes that if we don't know what's going on, it will just keep continuing. So it's important that people find out these things, that they get active, and that they make, you know, help make change happen. And I would love to spend some time, if it's okay with you, to talk about the good things that have happened.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because I worry about it. Really is rather depressing the more we get into it. So some good things. As I believe that you know already, in Puerto Rico, on the island of Vieques, where we had spent many decades exploding all sorts of things on that island, we eventually did get off the island years ago. I think it was about 7 years ago or so. It was six decades of bombardment of that island by the Navy.
Oh, you're talking about Vieques.
Vieques, yes. And the people are fighting back. First of all, they fought to get us off the island, and that happened when one of their citizens got hit by an errant missile. I'm sorry, not missile. It was some kind of a test. And anyway, the Vieques people are fighting back, and they came to D.C. and they basically let Washington have it, and because their people, approximately 8,000 of them, are suffering horribly with cancers and diabetes and other illnesses. So it's good to know that the people of AACAS are not sitting down on this. They're saying that they want treatment and reparations, and they also want their independence. They're still considered a U.S. territory, and they've just about had it. Which leads me to also another occupied territory. When I start getting into this, I did a lot of research on Hawaii, and I found out that the many, many Hawaiians still believe that they are not part of the U.S. They do not acknowledge statehood as we are taught in school in the U.S., that it's a state. We've declared them a state, but according to their own beliefs, that, you know, one nation can't occupy another and call it a state. So
we fight wars and do other nefarious things, Kathy, and then we claim a part of the world belongs to us, whether it's Hawaii, Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico isn't a state, but you could say we acquired it back around the Spanish-American War. Yeah. Puerto Ricans had nothing to say about it. It was a decision made in Washington. It had nothing to do with the Puerto Ricans. Hawaii, the same thing. They had nothing to say about our coming in and stealing their country.
Exactly. And what makes it even worse than merely stealing the country, which is bad enough, but the fact that we have used all but a couple of the Hawaiian islands for our military bombing, testing, training practice, and there are so many chemical contaminants and radionuclides on many of the islands of Hawaii that people, all the vacationers, don't even know. And the people
Hawaii, Kathy, is the place that, you know, the nickname for Hawaii is to call it paradise.
Exactly.
Some paradise.
Exactly. So what they have done basically is ruin paradise. And that reminds me of a quote, and I have it here. And it was by the uranium writer, Bob Nichols. He says, "I'm struck at the gall of these psychopaths to take what were arguably the most beautiful areas in North America that have been inhabited for thousands of years and utterly trash them in less than 60 years. And this is the case with Hawaii, but the good news, just like the people of Puerto Rico, the good news is the people in the Hawaiian Islands, they're standing up and they are saying, we've had it. And to make a long story short, there's been so many activist actions there, not just by native Hawaiians, but also by folks from the mainland who've moved up there and they're helping them. And what they did was, one of the sites, Pohakaloa training area, they call it PTA, they had live fire testing. They were dropping these bombs into this area, as well as the military using live fire in areas already contaminated with depleted uranium. So it was, you know, whipping up the uranium in the soils. And there are high rates of illnesses around these military bases in Hawaii.
And Hawaii is a very, very militarized spot. The U.S. military is all over Hawaii. Of course, it's a series of islands, but they do have training, I guess it is. I don't know whether you'd call it testing. Maybe some testing too. But but the troops train, and they use live weapons. And depleted uranium weapons, depleted uranium, all things that explode can be made of depleted uranium. I guess maybe not a nuclear bomb because you don't need it on that.
Right.
But shells and missiles and bullets, they have a depleted uranium core tip. And the reason is because this substance, which is radiation, but this substance is very hard, and it cuts through metal like a knife through butter, which is the reason they use it. But when it penetrates a target like a tank, it aerializes inside, or it aerializes into a fine mist, and this stuff gets into the air. The wind picks it up. It spreads it over a vast area. It contaminates water. People have no idea, but they ingest it, and we're talking about nuclear radiation.
Exactly, Steve. Now, the funny thing is, and it's really not so funny at all, as Matt Howard, he's a Iraq veteran, he spoke out very eloquently on a recent video that's going around the Internet from Winter Soldier from March, and he said, you know, we're using this stuff that's supposedly, quote-unquote, supposed to, you know, go right through the armored tanks, and that's why we're using it. And he says something to the effect of, the Iraqis, the Afghani people, they have no tanks to speak of. So, in other words, this is why they say they're using it, but it's actually, and it has been known since 1943, when you aerosolize uranium, it becomes, you know, submicron and micron, invisible particles that become a terrain contaminant that actually go through the air, landing in the air, water, and soil, contaminating those people, as we said, for billions of years. So this is not merely just to blow up a tank. They use it in their bombs, of many, many various size bombs. So they no longer need to use the nuclear weapons. They're using smaller bombs, but many of them. And I am reminded by Dai Williams, who gets after me, and Dai is D-A-I Williams. He's a uranium expert, very courageous. He actually went into places like Lebanon. He actually took radioactive soil samples, as did Ted Wayman, who I mentioned earlier. And they found that what they're doing now is they're using uranium munitions, but they've slightly changed the isotope, so you can't officially, it's not depleted uranium. And they say, stop using the words depleted uranium. It's actually a slightly different type of uranium munition, so that when they do the tests for depleted uranium on the soldiers and in the environment, you cannot say it's depleted uranium. They can actually say, no, we haven't used it there.
And Kathy, the word depleted, it's one of those Orwellian terms, making it sound like it's a benign substance. There's nothing benign about it. I mean,
exactly.
This stuff is nuclear radiation, the same kind of radiation that comes out of an atom bomb when they explode it. Except we're not talking about exploding atom bombs. It's just a bullet that aerializes, or a bomb. And you're right about no tanks in Afghanistan and Iraq.
Yeah.
But they bomb, and they bomb all the time.
Yes.
And they bomb neighborhoods.
Yes.
I mean, it's bad enough to bomb a neighborhood. It's even worse to use these weapons, so that even the people who aren't bombed are affected by the nuclear fallout of the attack.
Exactly, Steve. Now, you know, as bad as this all seems, this was the focus of most of my work for these years that I've been doing this. But recently, I've been doing a lot of study on the nuclear industry, and I thought, oh, everybody's talking about that. I won't talk about that because that's, you know, real common and no need to talk about it. Then I learned, and this is a really important point, many of the anti-nuclear organizations in the U.S. are not telling the entire truth about what nuclear power is about. And I've been studying this in great depth, and to make a very long story short, I found out, and this is courtesy of the radiation.org folks, that France is getting 79% of its power from nuclear power. We're getting about 19% or so.
I think France is the most commercially nuclearized country in the world.
Exactly. And of all of the countries in Europe, their men are number three as far as cancer rates. They are so high up there in cancer rates, all kinds of cancers, thyroid cancer and such. And what's happening is a French company by the name of Areva is trying to do huge nuclear work in the U.S. And to make a very long story short, I'm calling it the nuclear insurgency inside the U.S. because both of our political candidates and much of our Congress is very much good to go with bringing in many, many more power plants. We've got 104 reactors right now. They've got 34 now that have made application with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Many more would like to come in. They're trying to see if they can get the funding for this and if it can go. But the reason why I'm so concerned beyond the thought of a Chernobyl or a Three Mile Island is that each of these nuclear power plants that you see, most people don't know, I didn't know, but they actually leak radiation into the air and into the water.
Do. Oh, yeah. They do. And especially, Kathy, because most of them are very old, there has not been a nuclear power plant, a commercial nuclear power plant, built in this country since, oh, God, Mike, the 1970s, sometime
yes.
around then.
Yes.
So these plants are very, very old. In Chicago, Kathy,
yes.
I'm surrounded, maybe 100-mile circumference or so, I'm surrounded by 11 commercial nuclear power plants.
Oh.
So Chicago may be the most nuclearized city around.
Yes.
And these are all old plants. When I wrote my first article on depleted uranium, I mentioned a little bit about this. They have a terrible record of sloppy maintenance. And these plants absolutely emit radiation. And the cancer rates, not just in Chicago, but anybody living close to a nuclear power plant, and they usually put up in areas of lower income people,
yeah.
because an affluent area would never allow a plant like this to get anywhere near them. Of course, they can be harmed as well, but not as much as people living close to them. And the cancer rates can just go off the charts.
Exactly. That is what we're seeing. We're seeing high rates of cancers around the nuclear power plants, as well as around the uranium testing and explosion and training areas as well. And there are some wonderful people to recognize that you're not seeing them very much on the mainstream media. There is Alec Baldwin. He wrote The Misconception of Nuclear Power. It was a bold article. It was in Huffington Post, I'll say.
Oh, indeed. They're playing our song, Kathy.
Yes, yes.
this hour has absolutely flown by. Let's take a break, and we've got a few minutes to finish up.
Thank you.
Back to the news hour. We have a few minutes left, Kathy. Let me just give listeners your blog site again where they can learn about you, what you're doing, and the material you have on it. mytown.ca/garger, G-A-R-G-E-R. Did I say it right?
Correct. Thank you.
Oh, people can find it. Can they find you? I think they can find you also by Googling Kathy Garger.
Absolutely.
Kathy with a C, not a K.
That's right. Thank you.
Anybody can find me by just Googling my name. It's amazing how easy it is, and you don't even need to remember websites or blog sites. Just Google a name, and you'll quickly spot the site, and you can go right to it.
Yes.
And when I want to pull up my own blog, Kathy, sometimes I'll just I don't have it bookmarked. I'll just Google my name, and it pops right up, and I go right on it for whatever I need to go there for. But we've got a few minutes left.
Yes.
Finish up with what more you can pass on to listeners about this awfully, awfully important topic.
Absolutely. Thank you, Steve. I wanted to say there are some amazing people doing some amazing things. I want to spend a couple minutes just telling you listeners about them. There's Christy Brinkley. Bless her. She has done some amazing work on the radiation.org website. There is the Mother's Milk Project. These are wonderful women who up by Indian Point. Indian Point is a horrendous nuclear power plant very close to New York City, and high rates of illnesses around that. And there's a huge, huge concern. There are radioactive leaks into the environment. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has been very instrumental in leading that fight from Riverkeeper, but so much more needs to be done up there in Indian Point. And there is a wonderful website that you can find out all of this information. All you need to do is blog. It's a blog, but just put a Google search for green nuclear butterfly. You will find out about tremendous efforts such as Rock the Reactors, big band up there up in New York, and they're trying to raise funds and awareness for the nuclear fight. Also, there is the NIRS organization. It's NIRS.org, and they have fact sheets on what these radioactive materials do to the environment as well as to our public health. There are many fights going on. Oyster Creek, New Jersey, that's up in Ocean County. high rates of cancer there. They're trying also, just like Indian Point, to stop the relicensing. Relicensing by the NRC is tremendously successful. None of them so far, no matter how bad they have leaked, have been turned down to be renewed for their license. So we have these nuclear power plants, such as the ones near me, Calvert Cliffs Reactors 1 and 2, that were built in 75 and 77, and they've been relicensed to run to 2034 and 2036. Plus, what they're doing is they're trying to put these brand new experimental, untested nuclear reactors right next to them, and right by Washington, D.C., will be the largest nuclear power plant in the entire world once they're done. So there are, I got helped to start an anti-nuclear group here by D.C. Called, there's a few groups, but one of them is the Chesapeake Safe Energy Coalition, and that also can be Googled if you're interested. So there are so many things being done, and I want people to know that you can become involved, and just write me, and I'll give you more ideas.
Oh, we can all become involved, and we absolutely have to in our own self-interest, our own self-defense. Kathy, we're out of time. I told you the hour will fly by, but you know that. I didn't have to tell you.
Yes.
Kathy, thank you so very much for coming on. We have to do this again.
Yes, wonderful. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Kathy.
Take care. Thank you.